So pleased to welcome back to the program Alice Arena from the Friends, or rather the Friends, the Four River Residents Against the Compressor Station, FRACS, as they're more commonly known. Alice, nice to see you again. Thanks for spending some time with us.
It's good to see you too, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. I wanted to let you respond basically to the big developing news that's happened with the compressor station being town of Weymouth, basically dropping the lawsuit against Enbridge Energy and settling for a monetary decision instead. So what do you think about that?
Well, not much. So we'll say that right out of the gate there. It really is a very, very small sum to have settled for. We believe they should never have settled at all. So we'll put that out there because, you know, what price are you going to put on someone's life? What price are you going to put on their health? There really isn't anything that's going to make the people of the basin whole. And it's not just Weymouth. You know, we have to talk about Quincy. We have to talk about Braintree and even Hingham and Hull with the prevailing winds. So to have accepted such a paltry sum makes it worse. But also the town had, I believe, 5 lawsuits going. And one of the lawsuits was the appeal before the Department of Environmental Protection. And this is being heard, I think it's December 1st. I have to go back and look at my schedule. But in that particular appeal, the city of Quincy, the town of Braintree, and the town of Hingham had joined on to their appeal. And by dropping that, they left those municipalities holding the bag, which was just not good form.
So all 5 lawsuits have been dropped?
All of them.
Okay.
Yes.
I understand it's for a $10 million initial payment and then the potential for $28 million over 35 years in taxes. Is that about right?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. So the $10 million they are supposed to pay by December 1st. That's, you know, just what they put in the contract. The contract is available, by the way, on the town's website. So you can actually, you know, physically look at it and read it. The other 28 million that is predicted over 35 years has to do with a legislative change to the tax code on how an above ground utility is taxed. Now here's the fun part about this. These facilities are taxed and the money goes to the state and it all goes into a big pot. And out of that pot, it's divided among the towns that are hosting these utilities. So whether it's Calpine, which obviously is an above-ground facility, utility, or it's a compressor station that's in Weymouth or in Mendon or in Agawam, everybody gets a little piece of the pot. They're predicating this on some kind of legislative change that would make Enbridge pay more into that pot, and then all of it would come back to Weymouth. I am sorry. working with the legislature and knowing how these things work, that is just not going to happen. So the town has to get used to the fact that they took the $10 million and that's it.
And can that $10 million be used for anything, or is it earmarked for certain things related to the compressor station?
Well, that's a curious part of the contract, and there are things in it that just are not, you know, may not be legal. But it states that the money that the parties, which means Algonquin and the town of Weymouth, agree that the money will be deposited into the general fund. That's troublesome, because the general fund can be used for, you know, operational monies, you know, so your usual snow plowing or, you know, maintaining the parks or whatever. Whereas typically in a case like this, the money goes into a specific subaccount that is earmarked, as you said, for maybe improvements in North Weymouth or maybe additional emergency vehicles and things like that. And we've been told that a portion of it will go to purchasing a couple of new fire trucks that they're going to need. But the other things that they talked about it being used for were things like paving streets, which again, that's operational, and maybe something to do with some municipal internet. But it, you know, as I said, $10 million doesn't go a long way. The operating budget of the town of Weymouth, I think this year is about $175 million. So $10 million is really, that's going to go really fast.
Yeah. Was your group consulted, Alice, before this agreement was reached at all? Or was it a surprise to you?
It was not a surprise, Joe, on one level. So I'll explain that level. We had heard that Enbridge, Algonquin, same company, had been hanging around back in January. And we had heard that it was $10 million that we were offering. We did speak to the mayor about it. You may have seen posted on our website a letter that we sent him in April that talked about the potential of accepting this amount of money. And although we said, don't take it, no amount of money is worth it, we also stated some conditions that if you're going to sign something, you better be sure that you have these conditions in, you know, signing it. And although we were told that they used our letter as kind of a roadmap for what they were doing, they did not. They did not.
So why do you think, you know, all of a sudden, at least it seems all of a sudden, that the town capitulated and entered this agreement?
The official reason is that they saw that the facility is almost, it's built, you know, and it is shut down right now because this, after two accidents before they even went online, even the federal government said, you know, you got to do something here. So they're on shutdown and they will probably be shut down maybe for the month. It's hard to know, but they probably will be going online soon. So the town's official reason is, look, it's here, we're stuck with it. We might as well sign some kind of a host community agreement and at least get something out of it, because as I said, we need new fire equipment to handle this. And quite frankly, and I need to state this, the fire departments, whether it's Weymouth, Quincy, Braintree, Hingham, and we all are on mutual aid, you cannot do anything about it. If there is a fire or an explosion at that site, the fire departments cannot go in. So, you know, the purchasing of the equipment, yes, it has to be done. We've got to do additional training that, according to the contract, Algonquin will pay for. We're going to have, you know, more of a safety protocol and that kind of thing. So all of this is going to cost money. And the taxpayers are really the ones and the ratepayers that are on the hook for this. So $10 million is junk. The town took it because they thought they were at the end. And quite frankly, we're not there. We're not at the end.
Why can't the fire departments go in if there's an emergency?
So let me give you a quick example. A couple of years ago, a year ago or 2 years ago, whenever we had that vortex that came into Michigan and up around the Great Lakes, it was about 75 degrees below zero. There was a compressor station there in a place called Armada Township in Michigan. And it exploded. And it exploded based on the exact same conditions that we're going to have here in the basin. It was so cold that the system froze and it had to do an emergency release of gas. Now that worked the way it was supposed to work. So it did this emergency release of gas, huge, huge amount of gas. Now, because of the polar vortex, it pushed the gas down to the ground, and then the wind blew. And when the wind blew, it took it over the oil separator, which was running at somewhere around 1200 degrees Fahrenheit, and the whole thing exploded. Now, the wonderful thing about Armada Township was that this facility is out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And the it didn't affect a person or a farmhouse or anything like that. It literally just destroyed the compressor station. Now, bad news was it was 75 degrees below zero, and the state of Michigan had to issue an alert to people that had gas in their homes to turn their thermostats down to 55 degrees or there would be no gas because it took out a system. So when these things explode, or when there is a large-scale fire from an exploding pipeline, the heat signature is about 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, and the heat signature goes for a quarter of a mile. So the radius is about a quarter of a mile. Explosions that we have researched show upwards of 40 acres of land being taken out. So that's why the fire departments really can't do anything in a case like that. Now, if it's a, you know, a little leak or it's blah, blah, you know, that kind of thing, yes, they can do something about it. But if there is an accident, a large scale accident, you're on your own.
Okay. Of course, you can argue that it's never going to get to that temperature here in southern New England.
Okay. So, bad argument. In 2018, in January of 2018, a small valve at the metering and regulating station froze, and they released 238,000 cubic feet of gas before they were able to shut it down. And interesting point, the initial calls of this smell of gas went into the Quincy Fire Department because of the way the wind was blowing. But ultimately, it was so bad that people in Weymouth were calling the fire department and saying, I smell gas. And that was in 2018 at the metering and regulating station. And it was probably, below 30, but no big deal. Then in 2019, they froze another valve, same kind of a valve. And the lucky thing was, and these valves, they don't know when they freeze because they're not connected to any kind of a system that says you got a valve problem. So it's a small valve. They freeze frequently. Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration has issued a warning on these valves that they should put housing on them in the cold weather, and they don't. So in 2019, it froze again, but this time it took out the gas for a week for 7,000 customers in Newport, Rhode Island. Now that sounds nuts, right? It was lucky that National Grid happened to just, they were there. They happened to be at the metering and regulating station doing something else. They noticed this huge drop in pressure. The luck was that they noticed it because what happened in Lawrence and Andover because of overpressure would have happened in Newport because of underpressure. So the other thing is although, yes, we're talking about a vortex that came in and did this nutty thing, but if you have a situation in the basin where there's a large scale emergency blowdown, and those happen, whether or not, and we have a coastal zone inversion, the coastal zone inversion pushes the gas to the ground. Let's say the wind blows, as it frequently does out on that peninsula, and it goes over the oil separator. You could have exactly the same scenario, and it really doesn't matter what the temperature is.
I see. So I know that the Attorney General's office has said that they will be monitoring or at least looking at this station. Is there any recourse there?
There was. There were some things that could have been done. One of the things that we are continuing to talk to the Attorney General's office about is the environmental justice issues. And those come in for Quincy. Quincy Point and Germantown are both recognized state and federal as environmental justice areas. Because of that designation, they have protections, or they're supposed to have protections. Now, the sad part is that in the very blue Commonwealth of Massachusetts, we do not have any environmental justice laws. We only have policy. The policy under the Baker administration has been universally ignored. Now, the Attorney General has gotten involved because, especially because of COVID and how COVID affects EJ neighborhoods a lot more. She's gotten involved to look at this because obviously this thing is going to be off-gassing more toxins into these same neighborhoods who already have degraded health because of the air. So this is a way for her to watch and be watchful. Also, her office is watching how they're conducting this new safety review in light of the second accident. So, and that's why they're shut down.
And I know that part of the agreement, if you will, or regulation was to have an air quality monitoring station. Has that happened?
So that has been a lot of foot dragging. And the foot dragging was the DEP. The foot dragging was the town of Weymouth. They are finally in a position to have a place to put this monitor, but now they're having to do additional work. Apparently the land isn't flat, so there's got to be some grading done and that kind of thing. And it is supposed to be placed sort of on the back side of the Calpine Electric Power Plant, just off Manitowoc Street. And we have told them repeatedly, this is not the best location to put it. But we finally gave up and said, fine, just put it there. And we've been saying, just put it there since July. It's still not there. We're hoping that it's up in November or December. But the problem is, by putting it up this late, they're not going to have a baseline of the air quality before this compressor goes in.
Okay. And who monitors the monitoring station, Alice?
That's the Department of Environmental Protection.
Okay.
And it goes under, they have a regional, what they call a regional plan. And so there are air quality monitors all over the state.
Okay.
And Boston has a couple, you know, that kind of thing. So this would just be part of the regional plan.
Okay. So is FRAX still up and active? Are you planning to disband? You know, what's the future hold?
So absolutely not. We're not going away. So we also have lawsuits going. We are part of the air quality appeal that's coming up. Luckily, because the town withdrew, the timing of their withdrawal was very poor. And we were all set. We had our expert witnesses all set and up, and we were ready. And the city of Quincy, I want to give a shout out to thank them because they had been part of our appeal as well. But when the town of Weymouth pulled out, they left Braintree and Hingham and Quincy as well high and dry. And they did it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, and this testimony was due at 5 o'clock. So luckily they scrambled, and the attorneys for the individual towns were able to join on our appeal. And so FRAX is now sort of carrying that weight. We were the ones with the expert witnesses. We're the ones that have been in the fight all this time. And then we also have the waterways appeal that is in Superior Court. We have two federal appeals based on the denial of rehearing request in front of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So we still have multiple suits going. And our actions and how we're going to, you know, do things is we're going to be a watchdog. We're not going away. And however we can stop this compressor from operating, we're going to do whatever we can do to stop it from operating.
Okay, so the court actions don't stop it from going online, is that right?
Potentially, no. The one thing that would happen is in this air quality appeal, the argument here is that they should have looked at whether or not a better facility would have had an electric motor drive instead of a gas turbine. The federal court said that the DEP did not do its due diligence They remanded the permit back. They actually vacated the permit in June, and then they gave it back to them in August for nonsense. But, you know, that's my opinion. But they still said you have to go through what they call the best available control technology analysis, or what we call the BACT analysis. And they said the DEP violated its own regulations. This is the federal court talking. And they had to go back and do this BACT analysis. So of course they did, and they rubber stamped it again and said, nope, they don't have to have the electric motor drive. So we're appealing that. And we're saying you never even looked at it. And according to the DEP's own guidance on BACT analysis, if you're operating a facility, any facility that pollutes, you are supposed to look at every technology and, in the best of your ability, pick the one that is the least polluting. The electric motor drive would cut the emissions 50%.
Okay.
If they were to say, okay, you have to have the electric motor drive, then they would have to shut down and retool. It would cost them a lot of money to do this. But according to DEP guidance, money is not the issue, because that's not their problem. That's the company's problem. So it should have nothing to do with finances.
Okay. Speaking of finances, all of this legal action, I'm sure, is expensive. How is RACS funding these?
We fund through our many wonderful donors. As we say, no amount is too small. We do have a donate button on our website, nocompressor.com. But we also have been, over this past year, almost all of our grant money is going to our legal fees. So when I've been writing the grants, unfortunately, we were hoping to have some administrative money. And we've had to basically just completely switch gears and go directly and say, no, the grants have to be written for legal. So, you know, that's how we've been funding for the past almost 6 years when it comes to the legal fights. But we're going to need more, because now, without the weight of the town of Weymouth, it puts a lot more on us.
Sure. How many of you are there right now, Alice, would you say?
So we have a 15-member board for FRACS, and our membership is upwards of 1,600. And then we have, of course, allies across the state in other environmental groups.
Sure. Are you officially now a nonprofit, a 501c3?
We are actually, we are a 501c4, so we don't have quite the same tax status, but yes, we are an official nonprofit, incorporated nonprofit.
Okay. And what grants have you been eligible for?
Well, as a nonprofit, we also have what we call a fiscal parent, and our fiscal parent is a 501c3.
Oh.
And that's Community Action Works. And working with our fiscal parent, I write the grants that do things like pay for our crazy billboards and our on-air advertising. We've used grant money to do air quality testing. We've used it for all kinds of things, but I've been writing the grants for the past 6 years. But this year we kind of hit the wall on, you know, needing the legal fees. But also then what happened was we had written some of these grants with particular activities in mind, and then COVID hit. And that was the end of all of that. Mm-hmm. So I've had to go back to the aid, to the grantors, and say, can we use the money for legal fees? Because we can't do the activities that we were going to do.
And who are the grantors? Are they philanthropies or private individuals? Or
No, they are grant writing organizations that give mostly to environmental groups.
Okay.
And we come under that subheading as an environmental group. So one of our big grantors for the past 6 years has been a group called the Island Foundation. So they have been wonderful to us. We picked up a few more this year. Some of the grantors do not like to be mentioned. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I understand. Has this become a full-time job for you, Alice? This seems to be all consuming now.
Yes. So it's kind of been a full-time job for the past 5 years. I don't get paid. None of our board members get paid. All of the people that give of their time and energy, nobody gets paid. We're there because it's the right thing to do. We're there to protect our communities, especially in the basin, in the immediate basin, because we knew from the very beginning that this was not the place to put this. We are clear to say it does not belong on planet Earth, but it definitely does not belong on 4 acres of land in an urban environment when generally they put them, well, I would say exclusively, they put them in places like Armada Township on hundreds of acres of land, surrounded by nothing.
All right. Well, would you please keep us updated on the status of your efforts?
Absolutely, Joe. Thank you. And people can always go to our Facebook page, the Four River Residents Against the Compressor Station. Stay in touch with us at nocompressor.com. Activities and all kinds of things are always up there, especially in the news drop down. So keep informed, and we're still going to be there.
All right. Good to talk to you, Alice. Thanks for your time.
You too, Joe. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.